Welcome to the Night Nerd Podcast. I'm your host, Lance. It's Wednesday, so we're going to talk some comic books. Friday's our 500th show, and so all week we've been celebrating with some pretty big things. And I think today is the biggest yet. Last week we announced Cena Grace from Marvel Comics as our Writer of the Year. He writes Iceman, and it's amazing, and I love it. And actually, issue 9 came out today. Go to your local comic shop and pick it up. He was kind enough to sit down and talk with us about how awesome comics are, geeking out over the history of the X-Men, what it takes to get in the biz, and what we can expect from him in the future. So it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it, and I hope you will too. So here he is, Cena Grace. All right, we're here with the Night Nerds Writer of the Year, Cena Grace. Cena, how are you doing today?
I'm super swell. Thanks for having me and selecting me.
Yeah, it was a no-brainer. You know, there's a lot of great writers out there. Not trashing anybody, but everything you did this year, you know, taking characters that you did and telling the stories that you did, both on comic page and on screen with your YouTube stuff, you know, it's just really great and something that nobody else was really doing. You know, everybody's telling all these cape stories, and you were telling a very personal story that, for a character that's been around for 50 years, you know, hasn't been told, and it was something new and exciting and really great.
I appreciate it. Yeah, it was it's been a journey, so I'm happy to kind of end the year looking back with you, because I haven't even really processed like everything that's happened in the past 12 months. It's just been like a blur, and like on top of it, me just trying to like make sure I do a good job.
Well, you've done a great job, a phenomenal job.
Thanks.
So you've done a whole lot of things. To say you're a person of many hats is an understatement. You know, you've edited books, written, co-written, drawn, you've done music posters, advertising, you've done everything possible to get your foot into comics. You know, kind of what was that path, and how did that journey go down?
Yeah, some of it was intentional and some of it was not intentional, but all kind of rooted in my core belief that there's no one way, no one right way to break into comic books. So, yeah, I would just, you know, try anything and everything to sort of keep a place in the industry until I had reached a point where it was becoming like confusing to wear so many hats, because then, you know, people were like wanting to hire me to edit comic books. And I'm like, man, I don't want to edit comic books. I want to draw comic books. I want to write them. And similarly, like people would want me, you know, want to hire me to draw like, you know, their pitches or their indie, you know, books. And it's like, of course they would, because like they don't see from the outside, like why I would be drawing other people's stories, which is usually like, it's a friend and the idea, you know, really like piqued my interest. So it's like, yeah, do everything you can to get your foot in the door. And then once you have your foot in the door, it's sort of like pick a lane so people know how to hire you. Because otherwise you get sort of stuck kind of like taking the job you don't want to take to pay the bills, and then getting too distracted to focus on the thing that you want to be paying your bills. But yeah, I did everything, like, you know, self-publishing, setting up at conventions on my own, editing comics, like you said, designing them and everything. And it just all kind of didn't really start coming together, I think, until I was at Image. And then once I had like a home, like a publisher, then I feel like that's when, you know, I really became who I am today.
Yeah, well, and I'm glad you bring that up, because at Image, you've published some very like personal stories. You know, your style and a lot of your books are not necessarily, I don't want to say slice of life, but it's a slice of your life, you know, very a peek behind the curtain, as it was, of the Wizard of Oz. And we get to see, you know, what you go through and things. How is that, you know, versus writing a cape story, or, you know, a superhero story, to, hey, everyone, this is my life, this is what it's like, and I want to open up and share all this with everyone?
I wish there were times when I was in the thick of doing all these sort of reflective memoir books where I really like understood what it was that I was doing. And then time passes and I never write this shit down, you know? And I just keep assuming like, oh, I'll remember where my head was at when I did this. I'll know, and I'll be able to speak to it. And then the book comes out and then time happens and you kind of forget. But, it was a lot of that, a lot of that stuff sort of stemmed from, doing what people were responding to, you know, and people, readers and colleagues and people and folks I respected, they always said that the memoir stuff, the slice of life stuff, the rougher stuff, that they really liked it, and that, you know, if I worked at it enough, I would be on to something. And you have fewer people to pay when you are, you know, writing and drawing and lettering your own book versus something a bit more mainstream, like that book, Burn the Orphanage. You know, we hired, you know, professional letterers and colorists, and they're not cheap, and they, you know, that makes a book expensive real fast. So it was also a bit of a survival tactic. Like, if I'm handling all the responsibilities, I don't have to pay anyone out.
Yeah. That's a huge plus. And
yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, it sucks, because like when you advise people about breaking into the industry, it's like, look, if you can't do it, you got to have the money, because if you can't pay someone, like, the quality of work you're going to get from, you know, a dude or dudette who's working like on a back end deal is not the same as someone that you can like actually offer a page rate to. So, yeah, it, you know, some of it came out of necessity, and then some of it came out of people telling me to kind of go in that direction a little more and see what happens. And then, yeah, I don't know. Yeah. And then also just sort of, I feel more protected when speaking about myself than, say, capes and stuff, because I think the world, the window of like interpretation suddenly changes a lot. And then everyone kind of overreads, and I don't know. Yeah, I'm now, but yeah, half necessity, half because people I respect told me to.
Talking about, you know, necessity and your love for the genre, you know, in these books, you talk a lot about you love comics. You know, you're a comic fan. Growing up, what were some of your favorite books? And even to this day, is there anything else that you're checking out?
Yeah, let's go year by year. All right, 1987. No. When I was very young, I was a big Spider-Man, Ninja Turtles, X-Men, Batman fan. Those were my jams as a little kid. And then when we're talking like middle school, high school, still an X-Men fan. Then started getting into like Top Cow and America's Best Comics, the Alan Moore line at Wildstorm, and the whole Cliffhanger line, like Battle Chasers and Danger Girl and Crimson. I love those books so much. And then as I got into high school and started working at a comic store, that's when I just had a huge like love affair with indie books. And that's when I like got into Blankets and, you know, kind of discovered the genius of Chris Ware and really, really fell in love with Dan Clowes. And that's right when like Marjane Satrapi's Persepolis was coming out, and, you know, Optic Nerve. So those, yeah, the like college years is when I got into indie stuff. And now, like, as an adult, as a grown-up, I feel very, very much like an Image Comics, Marvel Comics guy. I mean, I love Dark Horse. I actually, like, I would say one of my favorite books I read was House of Penance. That came from Dark Horse. But, yeah, I'm reading everything, a little bit of everything. I just picked up the new Street Angel hardcover by Jim Rugg. Which is not that new, I suppose. And then I do buy a lot of the X titles just to keep up with them. Chip Zdarsky's Spider-Man, I fucking hate Chip. It's such a good book. It's such a fun book. And I love the Archie titles. Not all of them, but a lot of them. Like, I love the, you know, like, I like the main one Mark Waid's working on. I like Chip's Jughead. I do read everything. There's this manga book I'm reading, and I can't remember it has like two titles, and one of them's it's Shula Rune, or like The Girl from the Other Side or something like that. That's a rad book. But yeah, I'm all over the place. And I like that I said I was an Image guy and didn't mention a single Image Comics book. But I love Scotty Young's I Hate Fairyland. I'm behind, but I love Saga. But I like to read that book at my own pace because it's fun to sort of, it's like binging, but like delayed. Like I just like, I'm like, oh, in a year I'll binge this. And other Image titles, Rick Remender's stuff is always really good. East of West is weird in a good way. I just read Monstrous this year. Very cool book, but also still like, what the fuck is going on? Because it's this massive, massive sort of fantasy epic that she's building out. Yeah, those are my jams.
Nice. I'm glad you mentioned Blankets. I think the year Blankets came out, all of my friends got a copy for Christmas because I was like, you need to read this book. It's great. It's great. And I love how, you know, you mentioning all these books that you read, you know, it's great to see someone in the industry appreciating the industry as well. I mean, I know there's people out there that read their book and that's it, and that, which more power to them. But obviously, you know, through all of that, you kept talking about how you're an X-Men fan. You love the X-Men, at various stages in your life, kept going back to them. So how did Iceman come about? You know, that's one of the original and it's great. How did that happen?
I was writing here and there for the X-Men offices for this editor, Daniel Ketchum. And I was working really hard to convince him to give me something. I was like, please, let me know. I was like cold pitching him things. Like, he wasn't even asking. And I was like, hey, here's my idea for this thing. And he's like, thanks, we're not going to use it. And so when the Resurrection relaunch came about, he had gotten Marvel's blessing to go forward with an Iceman series. And he called me and said, hey, as you're aware, like, Iceman came out 2 years ago, and then all the Inhumans versus X-Men stuff happened, and they never really dealt with the older Bobby Drake's journey. And he's like, what would you do? And I just sort of sat down, had a think with him, I like to like lean into the core of things, because usually if you take a risk that way, the readers will follow you, as opposed to like, I'm just gonna like throw everything in the dumpster and light it on fire. I think for as exciting as that can be, that also can lose you a lot of fans. So I just like leaned into it. I was like, okay, what's going, like, what is Bobby? Like, he's just this jokester who, you know, is hot-headed, has ice powers, and parents who kind of will always hate him for some reason. So I just like leaned into those core things and kind of built a coming out narrative around that, you know, around sort of what we know about him, because I am aware that fans don't necessarily love that, you know, Iceman's come out. But at least I'm here to say, like, well, there's no changing it. And if you look at the subtext, there's a reason why Bendis did this with this character. It's in there. It's in the, you know, it's in his history. There's a reading. And I'm here to, like, kind of tie it all together and make it work. So that way we're respecting the fact that he dated women for literally decades. But now he dates dudes.
Yeah. And you know, leaning into it, the history of it, there's been so many points in the book, which you can go pick up volume one right now if it's in your local comic store and on Amazon pretty soon. But I love, there's little moments there that just harken back to random moments in the X-Men history or in Bobby's history, especially, you know, moving out to LA, going out to LA for a little bit and ultimately deciding to move back out there. But the little interactions he has, like with Kitty or with Colossus or anybody, it feels very true to the X-Men mythos, the X-Men idea that personally, I know and love. And so, like you said, instead of just lighting it all on fire, it's really neat the way that you've taken what was and added to it. I mean, like, yeah, this happened, but it was because of this. And when you're doing that, you know, you talked about fan reaction and things. Have there been, were there any plots that you were like, maybe that's a little too much, or, oh, I need to go harder on this?
I guess the thing that's really tough about this book, because like sexuality is a prevalent theme or what have you, is that, you know, I think some people would want to see more of his nightlife, his you know, what he does behind closed doors, but X-Men books are like 90s PG-13, and you know, you can go through any of them, and there's never a like direct mention to sex. Even when Scott Summers is caught cheating on Jean Grey, it's like after the fact and in his head, and like it, you know, it's all implied. And so I think that's the aspect that I kind of always get caught sort of trying to figure out which direction I want to go in. Because I know that that's something, you know, like the progressive, like, you know, comfortable in their skin, you know, queer readers want to see. They just want to see themselves in the book as much as possible. But at the end of the day, it's like, well, you've got to make this 90s PG-13. And like, so finding that middle ground has been kind of the challenge in my head in terms of like, oh, like, where do I go? What direction do I go with this? And I think at the end of the day, like, I probably just like answer to editorial. Like, I'm like, I'll let them tell me what to do, you know, because they have a better sense of what will read on paper and what won't. I'm trying to think of anything else. I don't know, it's already apparently enough that he's gay. Like, I haven't thought to do anything that was status quo changing beyond that. I don't know, we'll see, because the next issue coming out in 2 weeks has some pretty, I think Doc Hen is the one that I've taken like more liberties with or more risks writing with, and that's where I'm really nervous, because I knew Doc Hen had a strong fan base, but I was not aware that like they want and appreciate a very specific Doc Hen. So we'll see. He's a little too malevolent for where he's been in the X-Men universe otherwise. I wish I'd have like kept in touch with the writer of Wolverine and been like, so what's your take on Doc Hen? Because he's coming in your book the same time he's coming in mine.
Well, from what we've seen so far, I really enjoyed it, and the way his character's building, which is great, you know, seeing a legacy character like that going up against one of the originals is just brilliant and beautiful and amazing.
I'll take it.
All sorts of adjectives. We can say this is 20 minutes of adjectives of praise, but no, it's really great. So, like I said, the first volume is available at local comic shops now, and coming soon online and things. And tell us a little bit, if you don't mind, about that. What's collected in that trade? What's that first story kind of hits on?
Sure. It's Iceman Volume 1, Thawing Out. It's the first story arc follows. It's like the reader's getting a sense of who Bobby Drake is and where he is in his life. He's Iceman. He's one of the original five X-Men. And he's in this position now where he can kind of sort of like navigate his life however he wants, but he doesn't know what to do. And the thing he knows he has to do is the one thing he's avoiding, which is like, he just needs to come out to his parents. Like, everyone knows. And there's a really cute, sequence in the third issue where, he basically like grouped, like he just text messages people he hasn't directly confronted and is like, hey, this is what's going on. I'm working through it. I know I shouldn't have sent a text, but whatever. And like, there's a really just cute splash page of sort of all the characters in the Marvel universe reacting to him being gay. And the whole arc, you know, of him with him fighting purifiers and fighting Doc Ken and trying to rescue this kid with glitchy powers. It's all building in this first collected edition to him having the conversation with his parents. And when he finally gets around to it, spoiler alert, it comes up right against a Juggernaut attack. And the two are played, in my opinion, very well together. But yeah, so he fights a lot of bad guys. We learn a little bit about his powers because for the X-Men buff listening, you know, we're all aware that Iceman is what is referred to as an Omega-level mutant, which means he's super fucking powerful. And let me tell you, it is really hard to give Iceman bad guys that, like, wouldn't just go to the X-Men. And he, you know, couldn't just, like, stop in 3 minutes. So that was always the fun part about this series, was, like, how do I make it so, like, Iceman's the only one punching this dude and, like, Kitty isn't just like, all right, the rest of the team's coming.
It's a lot of fun. I highly, highly recommend it. On the flip side of things, you also have a YouTube series based on your graphic novel, Self-Obsessed. And
yeah,
it is great as well. I've been binge-watching the second season a couple of weeks ago, and it's wonderful. How is that, you know, adapting your own work and acting in your own work, again, another hat, an actor, how is that versus comic book writing?
It's a lot more collaborative, for better and for worse, because you lose control of so many things that, like, you can't even like expect or see coming. You know, one, like, a very easy example of just sort of, like, producing a story for screen, you know, versus for comics. We were super lucky to shoot at Stan Lee's Comic-Cosy or Stan Lee's Comic-Con. Super nice people. Thank you, Keith, if you're listening, because you're totally listening.
I hope so.
And, you know, they told us we had this much time and this was the time that the convention would be going on for. And we were shooting, and then just out of nowhere, the lights shut off. And it's because, like, they were just, like, getting ready to, like, close the con at, like, 5 on the dot. And so, like, at 4:30, some of the main lights just started dimming, and we were like, fuck. We pulled it off. We got almost everything we wanted to get, and we only were able to shoot for like 7 hours, which is not a lot of time when you're making motion projects. So stuff like that, where you just have to be really flexible and organic, and then you also have to be a team leader. And as a writer, I always would write towards the budget, and everyone tells you not to do that when you're writing for screen, that you should just put your imagination out on the paper and then later let someone else sort of put you in check, for lack of a better phrase. But because I knew, like, I'm the line producer, executive producer, whatever, because it's a fucking web series, I just was always writing sort of towards a budget. So that's something that's different than comic books, because in comic books, you just basically write to what you expect an artist to be able to draw. You know, so it's like, yeah, it's really weird and intense and cool, and rewarding in a way, different way, because when you pull it off, like, it's so nifty, you know, to have done it. But it's just a lot of work. And then because the people involved in it, you know, for people listening, I know none of you have watched this web series. It's about me as a comic writer and artist struggling, you know, my book gets canceled. I flail about trying to, you know, find my way in this world. And then the second season is about sort of, I forgot what the second season's about. It's been so long. I do conventions and stuff. And I fall in love with a cute guy, and that's what it is. I pitch to an editor and I bomb. I totally forgot the second season. That's how sort of insane this year has been. But, you know, people are playing real people. Like, the actors are playing themselves as actors, and comic book people who show up are playing themselves. Like, for Skybound fans, Sean Mackowitz, the, what is his role there now? Like, editor-in-chief, King Poobah or whatever. He plays himself. Like, I visit the, you know, offices where The Walking Dead is made, and totally bomb. But it's cool. Yeah, it's really cool. It's just, but it's a whole nother story when you're talking about, like, I'm writing you as you for you. Are you okay with that? And there's a whole new line of procedure that, like, I was not immediately equipped for, but I figured it out. I sorted it out.
Yeah, I think it's great. Like, it's a lot of fun to watch. All the episodes are, you know, 5 to 10 minutes long. Easy binge watch, and I recommend pretty much anything with Cena's name on it. Obviously, if you haven't taken it, I recommend you check it out. It's great. Talking about adapting your stuff and your stuff being, you know, out there. Curious, just random question for you. With all the new shakeups that look like they're going down with on the cinematic side of things, do you have anybody in mind that you would like to see play Iceman in a new X-Men franchise?
Oh man, I always have this answer and I always forget it. The kid from the Real O'Neills would play an amazing young Bobby Drake. I think, I don't remember his name. Also, yeah, I keep forgetting. I think Sean Ashmore could come back and play an older Bobby Drake. Like, he still looks young. Like, he could play a young 30s Bobby Drake. He was a good Iceman to me. Cord Overstreet from Glee would be like a left field choice. I did have someone who was like perfect and I completely forgot him. But really anyone would be cool as long as they had, you know, good sort of comic timing. That's all that matters. Mm-hmm. And a square jaw, like a handsome square jaw.
Oh yeah. They have to look the part, you know, the attractive on ice, but yeah, that's always great. And that's another thing, going back to your Iceman book, the art on it has been impeccable. There's been so many great, artists on there that really just compliment your work and tell your story, and that's something, your synergy there with them at least comes across as seamless and wonderful. What's that like working with someone else and not doing your own stuff?
It's eye-opening. Well, it's eye-opening because then I learn a lot about sort of laying out the comic page, because what I do is when I'm scripting, I lay the book out in its entirety. I don't show the artist, but I do it to make sure that what I'm asking them isn't preposterous. That even if it's like a 7 or 8 panel page, I know it can be done. So it's been really cool to sort of see like what I think it's going to turn out, how I think it's going to turn out versus what the artist does. And each one that I've worked with on this book, and with other, you know, instances where I've been just the writer, not the artist, I'm like usually always like surprised. And sometimes what's crazy, like with the artist in the first arc, Alessandro Vitti, like he really like always kind of, I wouldn't give too much in the description because I want them to have fun with it and I want them to make it their book too. But he like kind of always did what I expected, and that was nutty. And then the artist I'm working with now, Robert Gill, Robert, if you're listening, I love you. I just assume everyone's listening. And, but with him, it's really cool because he kind of doesn't always do what I think I'm putting down. And that's what's neat is to sort of see like the same image I had in my head, but from a different camera angle. And it's like, oh, whoa, that's way more rad. And he and I had a good phone call before doing the 7th issue of Iceman. We just had a phone talk about like, hey dude, like what are you into? What do you like drawing? What books are you reading? Which artists are you following? Okay, gotcha. Like you're into this, you're into that. Cool. And the, you know, he he's funny because he was like, man, throw me anything action. Like, throw me some cool-ass action shit. Throw me some X-Men. And in issues 9 and 10, there are so many X characters floating in and out because the plot is Bobby's having his going-away party. Dokken, you know, stages an attack. And everyone is kind of kept busy. There's like 30 mutants. So, well, not all of them are kept busy, but like the youngsters have their conflict. The X-Men Gold team have their conflict. And then like Iceman has his conflict with Dokken. And Robert was just like grousing about it. And I was like, dude, you told me you wanted this. Like, you told me to push you. I'm sorry. Like, I'm sorry that, like, you know, you have to do all these double page spreads and like intense fight sequences, but he's amazing. He came up with some really cool ice moves that you'll get to see in issue 9 that I love so much. Because with some double page spreads too, I'll just be like, hey, do whatever you want, break it down however you want. Like, these are the three things that just have to happen on the pages. I hope I get to work with him again because he's really talented, and I think he's just going to keep getting better and better and better.
Nice. Speaking of the future, you know, the upcoming Iceman issues and things, are there any dream projects for you down the road? Any characters under any of those banners that you mentioned at the top of the show that you would like to tackle or work on?
Some of them I can't say, so I'll say the stuff that I know I can't do. Like, I would love one day to draw, not write, draw Death. The Vertigo character that Neil Gaiman created. I would love to do that sometime in my life. I think maybe, you know, like, and in my head, I'm like, maybe I'll even be good enough for this to be a legitimate conversation in like 2 years. Who knows? But Death, I love that character and I love the aesthetic of it. So I'd love to work on that. And then on a broad strokes level, I would love to take on an ensemble book and sort of make multiple characters grow throughout the arc rather than just doing individualized character studies. And I guess that's why Iceman was so in my wheelhouse, because like all the memoir stuff I did, I've been doing at Image, it's a character study, but it's of myself. So I'd love to do, I'd love to do like a team book. And I'm trying to think if there's anyone I do love the Archie universe and I would love to write something there. And we've been talking. It's hard to find, you know, which book, which angle, which mythology. But fingers crossed, maybe I can do something with Archie Comics soon. Because I love that stuff. I love, like, all ages stories about teens being super sort of affable. And, like, everyone just says, like, wonderful one-liners to each other. And they just get in all these, like, complicated, like, friendship and love triangles. I love triangles, but, those are sort of the areas I would love to play with. It would be even cool to like do like Buffy story that like took place in the season 2, season 3 sort of window, at like peak late 90s fashion. those are sort of, I'm trying to dream more ambitious because then hopefully I can land, bigger gigs in the future that way.
That's awesome. We will gladly sign up for anything, like we said, with your name on it. We look forward to what's out there. Before we wrap up, we've talked about all these amazing books. What's the best place for people to, you know, find and support your awesomeness on the internet?
I guess if it's on the internet, like Amazon.com, I mean, obviously, okay, so myname.com is my website, but my web store is just like merchandise I make myself, like pins and zines. But you know, I don't know, everywhere, anywhere, like order the comics on Comixology. I guess just doing things legally is all I ask for. Like if you can just spend money, on the thing you're consuming, that would be much appreciated. Because it really is down to the dollar, you know, even with wherever you are in politics, like everyone has seen that it's like it's down to the individual sometimes, you know, it's down to like one vote, $1, So yeah, if you like listening to me talk today, please just, you know, go order Iceman or any of my Image books at a comic store, preferably. Comic stores need our love. You know, if you don't care, then Amazon is appreciated too, because it all counts. You know, every dollar counts, and you know, Marvel, DC, Dark Horse, Boom, IDW, they're all aware of, like, sort of where the orders are going. So yeah, any of it, any and all. And then yeah, my pinned tweet on Twitter has the link to all 10 episodes of Self Obsessed available right now. And then luckily with my stupid name, I have all of the domains. I think you can just type Cena Grace and my nerdy picture will show up at the top of any search.
Yeah, it's great. When talking about local comic stores, real quick, when Iceman number one came out and launched my LCS, local, for those of you that don't know, that's cool slang for local comic store or local comic shop. they had like Iceman Funkos there. They had like some of the action figures. They made a big deal about it. And that's, like you said, that's when you show love to your local comic shop, because you don't get that experience anywhere else.
No, you can't. And yeah, that's it like, it breaks my heart if I ever have to see a shop close down. I know it's tough, and that's why I just, like, I every step of the way I'm like, okay, gotta, like, I know this is a couple bucks cheaper on Amazon, but like, I'll have it today and in my hands if I buy it at the comic store right now, and that comic store will still be there to order more of my books tomorrow. Yeah, I don't know. And also, like, you know, it's, you get better recommendations at a comic store than at a bookstore, because they're reading all this stuff and they care about it in a way that, like, you know, the comic book guy at Barnes & Noble just can't, you know?
I preach in the choir. I agree wholeheartedly with all of that. Well, I think that about does it for us. Again, thank you so much for being on the show. You're insanely talented. We love your work here. I'm fanboying right now, I know, but you're just really great, and I can't wait for the rest of Iceman to come out over the next few months. I'm really looking forward to it.
Thank you. I'm gonna need to call you anytime I'm feeling down. Like, I'm gonna be like, Lance, I feel like shit. Say nice things again. But no, thank you for having me, and let's hope that you know, that there are more awesome comics in 2018. We'll find out this week when I read Matt Rosenberg's Phoenix book. Matt, you better have done a good job, and you better be listening to this.
I just hope half the people you think are listening to this are actually listening to this. That would make me
happy. That's the secret, is I'll tweet all of them and be like, hey, I mention you. You have to listen to the whole entire thing to find out what I said, because if you wait till the very end, I'll bring you guys up again. Like Keith Trailins, I love you. Matthew Rosenberg, I love you. Who was the other person? Oh, Robert Gill. I love you. But they won't know if I said that unless they listen all the way through.
I like what you're doing there. I'm going to have to hire you as my PR guy now. So I'll pay you with compliments, and, you know, it's a win-win there. But
that's all I need. I'm like Tinkerbell.
Awesome. Well, I want to thank everybody out there for listening and checking us out. Make sure, like I said, go pick up Iceman. Go pick up Self Obsessed. Watch the web series, do all these things. It'll make your life better, it'll make our lives better, and yeah, we appreciate it.
Thanks, sweet.
Again, I am so honored that Cena came by the show. Hopefully we'll have him back soon. Hopefully we didn't scare him off by fanboying out too much. But if you like what you hear, go check out his stuff. He has an amazing catalog of work, anything from Iceman to Self-Obsessed to Not My Bag. I mean, all sorts of amazing things. CenaGrace.com is where you can find most of it at. If you like what you hear on our end of the thing, make sure you check out all of our stuff. Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube. Just look for The Night Nerd. We're out there. Also, Patreon.com/TheNightNerd. All sorts of cool merch and bonus shows and things like that for you to check out for just a couple bucks a month. It's really a lot of fun, and that's how we're able to do cool things. Yeah. Also, check out the other shows on the network. We have Blah Blah Comics, Blah Blah Curse Words every Sunday, mostly every Sunday.
And then, of course, our new project, DC Animated Adventures, every Tuesday and Thursday. Check out all those. But mostly, go to your local comic shop, pick up Iceman Volume 1, pick up Issue 9, came out today. Go do all those things. You won't regret it. Again, I'm Lance. Thank you all so much for listening. Thank you, Cena Grace, for being on the show and being a phenomenal writer. And we will see you all tomorrow.